Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
We're bringing in one of our favorites, Rich Simini, covering the New York Jets. A lot of Jets news as we sit here in early May. Good morning, Rich. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. I thought yesterday was going to be a slow day, and it turns out to be pretty busy. So
it really was. Lots going on with the Jets. Yeah, lots going on with the Jets. Let's start kind of chronologically how it went down yesterday, and that was the signing of Frank Gore, which feels like it was right about 24 hours ago from this moment. I guess you're surprised that they went with Gore. You think maybe they were going to go with a younger back? I mean, kind of your overview of the signing of Gore, how he helps on the field and in the locker room as well.
Well, a little surprised by Gore, even though everybody knew that he had a really good relationship with Adam Gase. Clearly, this is an Adam Gase move. He's one of his favorite guys that he's ever coached. But, you know, after talking to Adam last week on my podcast, I thought that, you know, he mentioned that they were going to try to lessen the load on Le'Veon Bell. He indicated they might go with some younger guys. So I'm thinking younger guys. I'm not thinking a 37-year-old running back. But, look, I mean, he's going to elevate the intangibles in the running back room for sure. He's going to have a really good impact on the rookie, LaMichael Perrine from Florida, no doubt about that. I think he's going to have an impact on Le'Veon Bell, too. Not many people are mentioning that, but I think bringing a guy like that in, who's so revered around the league for his professionalism, I think it'll have an impact on Bell. You just wonder how much he has left in the tank. I mean, he's not Superman. He's 37. So that's the question right there.
So you bring him in for his intangibles, and, you know, as we go, you know, chronologically with what happened yesterday. So now you have no Quincy and no Bellamy. What do you do next, Rich? I mean, is this a position, obviously, that they're going to look to address here in the near future, the wide receiver position?
Well, I mean, frankly, you know, I think they were going to cut Bellamy anyway. And the Anunua thing, and I may even have said it to you guys on past shows, that Anunua never factored into their plans this year. I mean, when they sat down in the start of the offseason to figure out what they were going to do, Quincy was never in their plans. This was always the outcome. They can't cut him because of the guarantees in the contract that he signed, you know, a year and a half ago. So it would have cost more to cut him than to keep him on the PUP list. So they're keeping him on the PUP list for a year. And unless there's some sort of financial settlement, they'll release him after this season when it becomes more palatable to, you know, to cut him on the cap.
Rich, last year after we saw what the team looked like when Sam Darnold wasn't under center, we said that the position that the Jets have to address is backup quarterback. We saw Andy Dalton get signed over the weekend by the Dallas Cowboys. Did the Jets have any interest in signing Andy?
They did. You know, I reported that on Saturday. They did. I believe there was a mutual interest between the two parties, although I don't think it ever got serious, and I don't think the Jets saw themselves as a likely landing spot. I mean, they just knew that Dallas, because of, you know, his ties to Dallas, and he's got a home like 6 miles from the Star in Dallas. So, but yes, they were interested, and you make a great question there, Chris, because it is a need for the Jets. They can't possibly go into the season, whenever it starts, if it starts, with David Fales as their backup quarterback. They have to get a veteran. You saw what happened last year. The offense couldn't function without Darnold, and you just can't leave yourselves vulnerable like that again. So I do think they are interested in picking up a veteran, and I think they probably will at some point.
Our Rich Simini with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Here's what I don't understand. You say that the head coach, Adam Gase, wanted to lessen the load on Lev Bell. How many times did the three of us have a conversation with you last year of they're not getting him the football enough during the course of game after game after game? So I don't know. It almost feels like it's you know, opposing viewpoints of lessen the load for a guy that most people thought didn't get the ball enough last year.
Well, he did get 311 touches last year, which ranks eighth in the league. So, I mean, he did get the ball a lot, not quite as much as he got it in Pittsburgh. I think that's what Jet fans were looking at. How come he's not getting 400 touches? But 311 is a lot. And so I think Adams thought, when I talked to him last week, I think he just wanted to move that number down a little bit and, you know, diversify a little bit in the backfield. And like he said, he wanted to create a 1-2 punch with one of these younger guys. So the Gore thing, and then the Gore thing happened. So Gore is going to get the ball. I mean, in fact, I just looked this up before we went on the air. He's been the leading, he's gotten the most attempts on every, in every season that he's played, except for his rookie year in 05 with the 49ers. Even last year with Buffalo, he got more rushing attempts than Singletary. So I don't think Gore is coming in to be like some mentor. Well, I'll just sit on the side and carry the ball twice a game. I think he's coming here in his mind to get the ball a bunch. So it, to me, it's
what is that though, Rich? What is that? Ballpark that number. How many touches should Jets fans expect Frank Gore to get this year?
I mean, I wrote today, the, you know, 5 to 10 a game, but you know, I think it depends on how the game's going. Look, if Gore is doing well, you know, he's going to be perceived as the teacher's pet now, because we know Adam has a strong affinity for Gore. But if he'll leave Gore in the game, and there might be games where Gore has more carries than Le'Veon. And then, of course, us in the media, we're going to, you know, run with that, because how could that happen? You know, your $13 million a year running back is not getting the ball. So I think it just sets up all sorts of interesting and salacious storylines for the season.
Yeah, Rich, which I would imagine isn't necessarily in the best interest of the New York Jets in a season that's, you know, this important for the development of a young quarterback. I mean, did you hear anything around draft time? Were the Jets actively trying to shop Lev Bell at all? Because clearly, I mean, Adam Gase from day one didn't want to pay him this much money, and how he used him last year, or the lack of use, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, there's a disconnect. Adam Gase and Lev Bell don't see eye to eye. I mean, did Joe Douglas consider trading him this offseason?
You know, that's a fair question. They just can't. I mean, I think they probably, I'm sure they had conversation with teams this offseason, but they don't go anywhere. The conversations end as soon as they start, because the guy has got $13 million fully guaranteed. There's no team in the league. Even if the Jets proposed, say, well, we'll pay $5 million of that if you take the contract, teams laughed at him. You know, I mean, especially coming off a 28-year-old running back coming off a poor season with that kind of contract, it's immovable. So it's really a moot point. Now, maybe if we're talking in mid to late October and it's the trading deadline's coming up and the Jets are out of it, or, you know, say they're getting by with Gore and Perrine as their two running backs, and Le'Veon, you know, they could move him, then I could see something maybe happen in mid-season. But right now, there's no chance.
Rich, I want to ask you about another guy whose name came up in trade talks earlier this week. Conflicting reports about Marcus May being on the block. What's the deal with him?
The Jets are not trading Marcus May. You know, I think what Joe Douglas does is probably, I mean, he's made it pretty clear that he'll talk to any team about any player on his roster except for the quarterback. So I'm not surprised that they've had talks with some other teams. They are not looking to trade him. Now, he does have only 1 year left on his contract, and the fact that they drafted a free safety in the third round, you know, not only in the third round, but very high in the third round, Ashton Davis, certainly does not.
That was the Giants pick well from the Leonard Williams trade, correct?
Right, from the Leonard trade. It certainly does not bode well for Marcus May's long-term future, but I don't think the Jets are going to move him. They are not actively shopping him right now, I can tell you that.
Rich Simidi with us here, 98.7 ESPN. Rich, a lot of people say the step of Darnold, you know, into year three is going to make him better, or Perryman added to this receiving core is going to make him better. When I look at the Jets offense, the thing that has the best chance, Darnold, I would agree, but to make them better is the offensive line. Like, skill position players, I mean, they're pretty much the same team that they were last year, unless they make a move before the season happens. But for the Jets to be better offensively, in my mind, it's got to be through the offensive line. Is that a fair assessment of this?
Yeah, I mean, that was the root of the problem last year, was the line was just so bad. And so you could have four new starters this year. I mean, which is really, even in the NFL nowadays with all the movement, four new starters is a lot. And one of the things I wrote about today in the Darnold story was, it's going to be hard when this schedule comes out, you know, tomorrow night. I'm curious to see how they open up, because this offense is going to need some time to get together. You're talking four new offensive linemen, two new receivers with Perryman and Mims. And so there's going to be a lot of pressure on Darnold to get this thing together And so I'm real curious to see what kind of schedule they have early on, because it's going to be a transition period. The defense is going to have to carry the day for the first few games. And you're right, Dave, it's going to be on the offensive line. I think they need one more receiver, though. I mean, they need a big guy. Well, they need basically a healthy type Quincy Anunua, you know, a possession guy, a physical guy who could handle all the underneath. You know, Perryman and Mims are basically the same guy. They're going to run vertical routes and go deep. They need the guy who can work the underneath stuff along with the tight ends and Crowder.
Rich Cimini joins us here on the show. Rich, I mean, I know you said, this isn't my question, but I know you said Lev Bell wasn't tradable. I mean, maybe if he called Bill O'Brien, he could have got something done. They took on David Johnson's contract.
He'll do any trade, right?
Yeah, and Arizona got DeAndre Hopkins, which I'm sure Sam Darnold would have loved. So let's face it. I mean, you just mentioned the four new offensive linemen. You're going to have a rookie wide receiver. So there's going to be some growing pains for the offense. Last year, I mean, I know we talked about this quite a bit. You know, how well that defense played with all the injuries was one of the, you know, lone bright spots. So I expect that defense to be good, especially with C.J. Mosley coming back. But there still is that glaring hole at edge pass rusher. I mean, is that something that they're going to look to address here before the season starts?
I know where you're going. You're going to ask me if they're going to try to sign Clowney, right? Is that the next?
I don't love Clowney. I would have rather have seen them try to make a play for Ngakoue. Unless it's a 1-year deal, I'm not a huge Clowney fan.
You know, I think Clowney will end up signing a 1-year deal wherever he goes. I do not think the Jets, like up until like a couple of weeks ago, I know the Jets had only made one phone call to his agent, just a check-in type phone call. I really don't think that that's going to materialize for the Jets. Neither.
What about Everson? Rich, what about like an Everson Griffin, someone like that?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard his name. I haven't checked on his name, to be quite honest with you. I mean, you know, I think Joe is proactive. I mean, you saw even in training camp last year, he was trading for guys like Alex Lewis, you know, and Khalil, which obviously didn't work out. So I think he's always going to have an open mind on adding talent. But you're right, Edge. I think the defense will be solid this year, but, you know, the edge is a problem. They really didn't address it. They brought back Jordan Jenkins, which is, you know, okay. He's a complimentary edge rusher, but they don't have the guy, you know, and so it's going to be, you know, a lot of smoke and mirrors again with Greg Williams. They also they're not great at corner either. That's not a great combo to have. No shutdown corners and no edge rusher is not a great combo, but I think you saw, you know, with Greg Williams' creativity last year, you know, he can keep them in games by disguising and mixing things up.
Rich, I know we're not that far removed from the draft, but, I mean, some teams decide they're going to sign their rookie class sooner rather than later. I know there's no urgency to do it, and there's not a lot of complexity with the rookie negotiations because the contracts are slotted. But when can we expect Joe Douglas to lock up his first draft class?
Oh, I think you'll start to see some picks trickling in real soon. I mean, I think even yesterday a couple of teams started. Like you said, Chris, it's pretty much a formula right now. It's, you know, sometimes with the first rounder, there's a couple of very complex clauses that need to be ironed out, but the dollar figures are set.
Yeah, you know, it's usually with the offset language, correct, Rich?
Correct, with the offsets, and also you had this situation with Darnold a couple of years ago with, you know, default language with regard to suspensions and things like that. So even Quinnen Williams came in a little bit. He was actually late, right? Didn't he show up a day or two late?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but it's pretty much formula. Now the Jets are picking a little low of the 11th pick. There really shouldn't be a problem. I do think those picks will start coming in real soon.
All right, Rich, we appreciate it. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we will talk to you probably next week or very soon in the not-so-distant future.
All right. Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff, of course. That is Rich Cimini. Quickly, before we get back to the Jets, guys, the UFC makes its return on May 9th. That's this Saturday. And it's going to feature a double main event live on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. First seed, number one ranked lightweight contender Tony Ferguson square off against number four Justin Gaethje. Then a bantamweight bout between Henry Cejudo and Dominic Cruz, UFC 249. It's finally here, and 98.7 ESPN is getting you ready with the Sweat at Home contest. This is your chance to score a 98.7 UFC prize pack. We're asking our listeners to send us an innovative in-home workout video that will judge on creativity and clarity. Make sure to keep your submissions under 30 seconds. Tweet us your video with our show handle at DCR on ESPN and use the hashtag 98.7SweatAtHome. To see the official rules, go to ESPNNewYork.com. Here at DPHO, Canty and Rothenberg, we're getting you ready for the UFC 249 on May 9th. That's this Saturday on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. So, Chris, I guess the Jets need the offensive line to be better because Darnold, you'd think, would take somewhat of a step from years 2 to 3. The weapons are very similar to what they were last year, and Rich said it, and I think this is very true. The offensive line, they have to be much better than they were last season.
They have to be better, and you see that Joe Douglas has invested a lot of resources this offseason in that offensive line. They signed George Fant, Connor McGovern in free agency. They also re-signed Alex Lewis. They drafted Mekhi Becton. So, I mean, that offensive line has to be better. The biggest question I have, Dave, is who's going to be the starter at right tackle for the Jets? Like, is it going to be Fant? Is it going to be Doga? Like, we just don't know. Like, the other guys, we're pretty certain are going to be there. Becton's going to be your left tackle. Lewis is going to be your left guard. McGovern is your center. And Brian Winters probably is your right guard. The biggest question is, who's going to be the right tackle? Who do you trust in that position? And I know we're talking about the zone running scheme and how it's going to be a lot easier for those guys because they're going to be working more together as a group. But when you get in obvious passing situations, long downs and distances, you know, who do you trust to be able to hold up one-on-one against the premier edge guys coming off the right side? That's the thing that Joe Douglas has to figure out. And right now we're not going to have any answers. I think that's going to be one of the training camp battles that'll be interesting to watch for the Jets as we get later to this summer.
But you just said it, training camp, and who knows what training camp looks like? You know, who knows what the start of the season looks like? I mean, that's what concerns me the most. And I asked them about Anunua and Bellamy, and I realized, you know, when I asked the question that they weren't really part of, you know, Joe Douglas and Adam Gase's plans moving forward. But I mean, you heard Rich. They needed a wide receiver like Quincy Anunua. So we're still waiting on that. And if you're going to tell me now that with four new starting offensive linemen, that it's going to take some time for them to gel, well, I mean, do you guys feel like the New York Jets fan base right now, currently, as we sit here today, is going to have the patience to watch their team gel and lose games early on in the season?
No. No, I've said it a million times. You can't start at 2-5 again this year. You can't start at 1-6. You can't have, well, the back end of the season was really good, and I'm optimistic for next year with the Jets. That story's out the window. You have to have a good first half of the year this season.
Listen, well, yes. I don't care how much Frank Gore loves Adam Gase. You're talking about 1 of 53. Because for the most part, I mean, a lot of those other 52 aren't in love with their head coach. And you get off to another slow start and lose football games, I mean, you're going to have a real problem on your hands.
Yeah, it's a real problem on your hands. But here's the thing. Coming into this year, Adam Gase is out of excuses. You know, he's got the general manager that he wants. He's got the players that he wants. Like, there's no one else to blame if this season doesn't get off to the start that Jets fans are looking for. I mean, the next person in line to hold accountable would be Adam Gase, which is why there's a lot of pressure on him to prove that the second half of last year wasn't a fluke. We'll see.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like at the moment right now. I mean, you're not great at corner. You really don't have any edge pass rush. You still could use another wide receiver. I mean, you signed a 37-year-old running back to bring in for leadership. I don't necessarily know if, and I love what Joe Douglas is doing, but there doesn't seem to be like a real sense of urgency. And I don't know if, you know, that lack of urgency matches up with kind of the sense of urgency I feel from
Adam
the New
Gase.
York Jets fan base. It's not just going to affect Adam Gase. If they get off to a slow start and their offense looks bad, because, I mean, Adam Gase as a head coach hasn't had great offenses. If it looks bad, it's going to be a direct reflection on your young quarterback. And we took phone calls last year. Even him going through mono, you know, if the Jets, the Jets were 1-7. So we were getting phone calls in the first 8-9 weeks of last season that, you know, if the Jets have a top three pick, did they draft Tua? We got those phone calls. You remember taking those phone calls.
Sure.
Do we draft Tua? So what happens now? Year three, you get off to another bad start. Your offense isn't great because your offensive line is trying to figure it out. You don't have great weapons. You don't think the fan base is going to be all over Sam Darnold?
I think they will. Listen, most quarterbacks, I'm not saying everyone, but most quarterbacks who are drafted highly, who play from day one, by the end of year three, you know whether they're going to be a big-time quarterback in this league or not. right? I mean, Chris, most guys, you have an answer of whether you can bank on them for the next decade or not. And let's be fair now, and I still like Darnold. I still think he will be that guy. But we're 2 years in, and a lot of questions remain with him.
No, a lot of questions remain with him, Dave. But to your point, Bill Parcells used to always say he gives a player 3 years to show him what he can do, and then based off that, he figures out what he wants to do at that specific position, but also with that specific player. So for the Jets, this is a big year for Adam Gase and Sam Darnold. There's going to be a lot of pressure on him. The one thing I will say about Sam, I don't feel like the organization has done him any favors in his first couple of years. You've seen flashes of the talent, but I don't think he has the supporting cast around him to routinely bring out the best in him. And so I don't know how this year is supposed to be any different than the other two that we've seen from him, with the exception of the improvement that they've made on the offensive line.
Right. I would agree. I mean, you run through the AFC right now. Are they better than, I mean, top seven are going to get in, right? Are they better than New England? You can't say that.
I can't say that. I'm not
comfortable saying that. Are they better than Buffalo? They're not better than Buffalo.
No.
Are they better than Miami? I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I'll give you one. They're not better than Baltimore. They're not better than Pittsburgh. Well, are they better than Cleveland?
Time out. How can you, after what Miami just did in the offseason, in their draft, it wasn't like the New York Jets last year convincingly swept the Miami Dolphins.
No, but I'm being Jets optimistic here.
Yeah, okay, you can be optimistic all you want. I mean, it
you better be better than Miami, because if you're not better than Miami, there's a good chance you're coming in last place in this division.
Yeah, you're right, but to Chris's point, and to go against what you said, not all 3 years for every player are the same. Like, I get 3 years, but I mean, if you start looking at the first 2 years of what Sam Darnold has dealt with, lack of talent, having mono, I mean, new head coach, another new system, I mean, it's a little unfair to all of a sudden now have Sam Darnold on the clock.
I agree with that. Oh,
unfair or not, that's the reality of where we are in the NFL, right?
Well,
you're
going
to pay him at some point soon.
Okay, and you're right. But you can say reality. It's more like my nightmare, is that all of a sudden now we'll get off to a slow start. Offensive line will start to try to figure it out. And, you know, Adam Gase just is not a good head coach. Sam Darnold suffers. He struggles. The fan base turns on him. And he'll be the prototypical, you know, player for the dysfunctional teams in New York City that ends up finding his way on another team, when used the right way and surrounded with the right kind of talent.
Yeah.
I have no doubt about that.
I understand
either.
Your concern.
Because, you don't think that Dolphins fans were sick to their stomach watching Ryan Tannehill play for Tennessee this year and have kind of success?
I'm sure.
And Sam Darnold is way more talented than Ryan Tannehill.
So if you're not going to give me Miami, then how many teams can I look at in the AFC and say the Jets are better than right now?
Well, how can you defend it? I don't understand how. Listen, I love the Jets. How can you, take the glasses off for a second, how can you definitively say at the moment that the Jets are going to be better than the Dolphins?
Because their quarterback is better than what the Dolphins are marching out there.
Currently,
assuming that they don't play Tua.
Yeah, but you don't know that. I mean, who knows?
Ryan
Fitzpatrick is going to be the week one starter for the Miami Dolphins.
Yes.
That much is certain.
Listen, I understand that. That's fine. But also sometimes, let's face it, I don't care how talented your quarterback is. Your quarterback sometimes is the product of what he's surrounded by. If you have a good quarterback that has no one to throw to, I don't care how much talent he has. There's plenty of average quarterbacks that when you put enough talent around them, look like really good quarterbacks. You can't always ask the quarterback to make chicken salad out of you-know-what.
But if you're not better than Miami, Rick, you're in heaps of trouble. I mean, if you're not better than Miami, then you're talking about a team that's, you know, second or third worst in the AFC.
Yeah, I get that. I understand what you're saying. But look at Miami right now. I mean, they have a clear-cut number one wide receiver who had an unbelievable season last year.
Yep.
They just picked up Matt Breida, and they picked up Jordan Howard.
And they got Eric Flowers.
Well, I mean, yeah, now you just be
Miami
funny.
Has a long ways to go, though, man. I mean, listen, Miami had the 27th ranked offense and the 30th ranked defense. Now, I get it. The Jets were dead last on offense. They were the worst offense in the NFL. But they did have a top 10 defense. And that feels like that's what the identity of this team is going to be. And although the defense is still missing some key pieces, the defense from a talent level standpoint is better than they were last year. So that's why I'm saying the Jets should be better than the Miami Dolphins in 2020.
So the only teams that you'll give me now are Cincinnati, Jacksonville?
They better be better than them.
They got to be better.
But,
I mean,
but, but, But here's my point. Here's my point. Yes, I would like to believe that the New York Jets are going to be better than the Miami Dolphins. But you went into a season last year where the Jets were hoping to make the playoffs, and they won 7 games. The Miami Dolphins were actively trying to lose and get the first overall pick, and they won 5.
I don't have an argument to make with you about the culture in both places. I feel a lot better about what Miami is building toward than the New York Jets. Just because there's been so much dysfunction within the organization the last 3 years, and it feels like everybody in Miami is on the same page now. So I'm with you on that. But as far as where they stand today and going into week one of the 2020 regular season, I believe the New York Jets are a better team than Miami Dolphins.
So an article on ESPN.com about the biggest needs for every team around the NFL. I was surprised by the Giants one. Jets one makes sense. Jets one is edge rusher, which is, it's obvious, right? We just talked to Rich Cimini about it, Chris. I mean, the Jets getting to the quarterback through a legitimate edge rush is almost non-existent right now.
Yeah, they got to figure out a way to be able to get that done, Dave. And we thought that there were some interesting options out there with Ngakoue and him being, you know, linked in trade rumors. And then, of course, Jadeveon Clowney being a free agent. But the Jets have got to find a way to get better at that position. But I don't know that Joe Douglas looks at this year as the season where he wants to go all in terms of his resources, his salary cap, and whatever draft capital that he's willing to devote. I think this is more about trying to build on the second half of last year. We always talk about it, man. It just determines on where you're at and what phase of the process you are in developing your program with the team. And I don't think Joe Douglas looks at the 2020 season as the year the Jets are going to be competing for a championship. I think this is a stepping stone season. But the question is it going to be a big enough step from last year to this year to justify keeping Adam Gase around for a third season?
Which at the end of this, I mean, as much as I hate to say it, because I don't necessarily trust Adam Gase, is probably in the best interest of Sam Darnold. Can you imagine having to go through another coach with another system for him?
It'd be awful. To start fresh in year 4? No, it'd be terrible.
No, because I mean, then all you've done really is just you've completely, you know, burnt the years of his rookie deal, which are supposed to be the most beneficial.
Right, because you have to figure, if you have a new head coach next year, it means it did not go well this year. If it doesn't go well this year with Darnold and Gase, then you're going into year 4 still having questions about your, you know, air quote, franchise quarterback. That's the worst case scenario.
It's a terrible scenario. I mean, now all of a sudden, I mean, you see what's going on in Chicago with the Bears and Trubisky. I mean, they're not picking up his fifth-year option. And, I mean, that's a quarterback that they went, I mean, from 3-2 to get. So, yeah, I mean, listen, I don't even want to think about it because that would be the worst-case scenario. But, I mean, let's just hope with the improved offensive line. And, I mean, maybe they do add a wide receiver. We'll see who gets cut. If it's Dante Pettis, whoever it ends up being, that, you know, they could find a way to make this thing work. But, I mean, we'll get a good idea of, you know, what they're going to be facing when we see what the schedule looks like tomorrow night.
Yep, tomorrow night, 8 o'clock.
I can't wait for it.
I know, it's exciting. Let's go to some of the calls. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, you're next up on 98.7.
Hey, good morning, Dave. Good morning, guys. Hey, Chris, by the way, you're right on the money when it comes to Douglas and building a foundation and going forward with this team. Mm-hmm. The fans don't want to hear it. You know, of course, you go into a season, you want to win as many games as you can and try to get on a run. But I think when you look at it personnel-wise, that's why he pushed for a six-year contract, and he ended up getting it, and he knows he has some years to get it, and I think he's building the right way. You're right about Darnold and Gase. 2 years, the excuse is over. They both have to produce. And I got a question for Chris, but I knew you were talking about the Dolphins and the Jets. Quite honestly, I think I'm going to give the Dolphins a slight edge right now. Only because
over the Jets?
Yeah, now just hear me out. Let me just explain. Number one, we go down to Miami last year, we lose, okay? Then the Dolphins come up here. Basically, the only reason we won that game on a last-second field goal is because there was a bad pass interference call.
Mm-hmm.
We caught a break there, so they swept us twice last year with less talent that they have right now. And you know what? If Fitzpatrick, now, the way Fitzpatrick's career has gone, let's say he plays 12 games. Let's say Tua just plays the last 4 games. He, last year he had a good year. This year, he's due for a bad year. But if he goes out there and, you know, he limits his mistake, you guys mentioned all the skill position players they have. The Jets have a better defense. But pretty much, you know, you look at the two teams, you know, there aren't, it's basically they're the same. You know, they're both, you know, anywhere from 7-9 to 9-7 teams. And with the schedule coming out, listen, you know, we play the NFC West. So San Francisco's, it's good. It's a very difficult schedule. No excuses here. I expect a winning season. But if they end up 7-9 and we still have question marks, it's not going to shock me. Last thing here, Chris, this is directly to you because you're a defensive lineman. You know, Quinn Williams is getting a pass here, man. Everybody's talking about Gase and Donald and this and that. Williams was the third pick in the draft, okay? Everybody knows last year was really, you know, not an impressive year. As a defensive lineman who played the position, what does this kid need to do to become an impact player? Because I believe he has the talent, but what does he need to do to step up his game?
I think he has to be better with block recognition. I think that's the biggest thing for any defensive lineman, but especially interior defensive lineman, just because of how fast the game moves in comparison to the college ranks. That's why it typically takes guys, you know, a couple of seasons, 2 to 3 years, before you start seeing that raw ability flash more consistently. Now, with Quinnen, I mean, we talked about it. He was arguably the best player in last year's draft in terms of the defensive guys that were on the board. Now, Nick Bosa went out to San Francisco and lit it up. But, I mean, Quinnen Williams was in the conversation as one of the best players in last year's draft, and he had a disappointing season by all accounts. Now, it's a lot harder to be effective as an interior defensive lineman and create the kind of sack numbers that fans are looking for when you don't have a dominant edge rush presence. So, you know, the Jets missing that player on that defense makes things a lot harder for the rest of the defensive linemen. But, yeah, Quinnen Williams has got to show and prove. Like, he's the third overall pick. They've got to get some return on that investment, and that's got to start in 2020.
And how different would this defense look right now? And Rick's going to agree with me. I think you'll all agree with me. And it's a moot point if they had drafted Josh Allen instead of Quinnen Williams. We're having a whole different conversation about this defense.
Yeah, that's not even
no argument out of me. I mean, Josh Allen had double-digit sacks last year, so
yep. Yeah,
no argument.
But you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, right? I mean, this is what you have, and he's got to be better. I mean, Quinnen Williams was, let's be fair, was disappointing in year one. You expected more out of him.
Yeah, but Dave, I mean, that's, again, you're talking about a young kid, and I get he's supposed to be the best player in the draft, but this isn't an individual sport. I mean, there are things that, you know, offensive lines can do when, you know, you're one of the only guys they have to worry about. You have no edge pass rush. You have bad corners. I mean, it's not like you're setting this kid up to have a ton of success.
That may be true, but he was still disappointing in year one. Like, I expected more out of him in his rookie year.
Okay, I mean, that's fine, but I mean, this is a guy that plays in the interior of the defense.
But was he disruptive at all?
I mean, I don't think he was terrible. I mean,
I'm not saying he was probably he wasn't third pick worthy in his rookie year.
Okay, but you're speaking, but what you just said speaks to my point. The kid has high expectations coming in, but that doesn't all of a sudden just all of a, because he has high expectations, that just instantly translates to being, you know, that guy at the next level. You got to help support the kid. You got to put him in good spots. You got to surround him with talent.
But the expectation is that when you're drafted third, that you're going to have immediate results.
Exactly right. And the expectation is that Sam Darnold is going to be a franchise quarterback, but you've done him no favors either.
You're angry at the franchise, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Because you're sitting here talking about building a foundation and that Joe Douglas has got a 6-year contract. That's great for Joe Douglas. I don't think that the fan base feels the same about their head coach. So you can try to be, you know, building the foundation and let's, you know, do all the right things, building towards winning. Adam Gase has to win now. I don't care what anyone says. Adam Gase needs to find a way to win now because the Jets fan base doesn't trust him.
Nor should they trust him. I mean, he's got a lot to show and prove. I mean, Adam Gase had one successful season as a head coach and he's had, what, 4 years and two teams? So, I mean, yes. Yeah, this is going to be on him. And the days of having losing seasons are over. I mean, the Jets have had, what, how many losing seasons in the last five? Every single one of them, right?
Yeah,
2015 was the last time the Jets were good?
Yeah, we had the 10 wins. We lost.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. So, I mean, at some point, you got to get past that. And Adam Gase, he's got to do it this season because he doesn't have any excuse as to why this team shouldn't be contending for the playoffs.
But this idea that the Dolphins are going to be better than the Jets, I mean, Rick thinks there's a chance, and Ira thinks that the Dolphins are right there, if not better. I mean, that would terrify me. If the Dolphins are better, they've snapped their fingers and they're better than the Jets, if that's the case. In one off season?
Yeah, it scares me. I mean, I said this, how many times did we talk about this during, you know, the free agency period with the moves the Dolphins are making, seeing how they responded to Brian Flores last year when everyone thought they were going to be 0-16. They end up winning five games.
I mean, and they traded off Minka Fitzpatrick and Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah,
traded both of those guys off.
I mean, I don't care what you want to say about, you know, managers in baseball, you know, how important they the head coach remains vital to an NFL football team's success. And you got one coach that's already shown that the players respond to him. And then you have a coach with the Jets that I was listening to Brian Cox yesterday. Out of nowhere, he brings up Adam Gase. Brian Cox yesterday just brings up Adam Gase out of nowhere. I wasn't even watching Brian Cox to hear about Adam Gase, and he just brought him up as one of the coaches that can't get along with his players and has to get – he can't handle personalities, so he has to get rid of, you know, star players because he can't deal with those personalities.
Today on ESPN Daily, deep dive into the newest way to get to the NBA, the G League's professional pathway, Adrian Wojnarowski on why top recruits might join and the impact on college hoops. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. In these trying times, important to remember we pulled together as a community. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com. Let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. We'll switch topics up at noon, so let's get to these calls here. Let's go to Paul in Newburgh. Paul, you're on 987ESPN.
Hey, guys. First time, long time. I'm with Rick. This organization just kind of doesn't seem to get it right, and I just think this whole Adam Gase thing was a big failure. I just think it's setting everybody up for failure here. And also, you've got notable free agents out there. You got a good corner in Logan Ryan. You got Emerson Griffin still out there. I mean, he brings leadership to the team. He can teach the young guys. I mean, I hang up and listen to you guys, but when are we going to get this right?
Sounds so dejected. Well,
who knows? And I got a tweet, too, and it's obviously a Giants fan, and they're sick of me, you know, making fun of the Leonard Williams trade. And he tweeted me, "Don't worry, you'll get plenty out of Quentin Williams when he does nothing for you in 3 years and you flip him for a third-round pick." Such a bad guy. No, but that's – seriously, and here's the thing, though. I mean, my biggest concern headed into this season, and who knows what's going to happen, just if you go off, you know, past history of Adam Gase and the lack of success – is we saw it in the start of last year when Sam had, even with Sam coming back from mono and them getting off to that bad start, we took, you know, phone call after phone call, you know, is Sam Darnold the real deal? Do we need to address the quarterback position? The stink of Adam Gase is going to wear off on Sam Darnold. Those two are, I mean, the success of Adam Gase is tied to the success of Sam Darnold and vice versa. So if the team struggles and the offense is bad again, it's not going to just be Adam Gase that people are turning on. It's going to be the quarterback, too.
Yeah, that's the reality of it. No, that is the reality of it, but I think the difference between the two is Sam Darnold will get another season. Adam Gase probably won't. And now I know it's probably not ideal to have your quarterback on three head coaches in his first 4 years, but I think this is a situation that even if this season is a disaster, Sam Darnold can survive it, and Joe Douglas will go into 2021 with him as the starting quarterback.
100%.
So you'll still have a chance to be able to evaluate him and see whether or not you believe he's shown enough to be worthy of a fifth-year option and a contract extension. So I think that – I think when we start talking about Adam Gase, I don't have a lot of confidence in him. You know, you're hearing people around the NFL talk about how he doesn't have great relationships with his players, and guys that go other places or guys that are playing under new head coaches – seem to thrive without him. We saw what Devontae Parker did last year under Brian Flores. You saw what Kenyon Drake did last year with Cliff Kingsbury. Those are both weapons that Adam Gase had that he couldn't figure out how to use. So we saw that a little bit last year with Le'Veon Bell. So it's more of the same with Adam Gase and his ineptitude on the offensive end. And this guy's calling card is supposed to be being an offensive guru and a quarterback whisperer. He was brought here to get the best out of Sam Darnold. And in year one of his tenure, he's fallen far short of that mark.
Let's go to Buddha in the Bronx. You're up, Buddha.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing, man? Hope everybody's doing well, all your people and everything like that.
Well, we appreciate it. Same to you and yours, my man.
Listen here, man. I mean, Rick, you hit the nail on the head 1,000 times. What does your gut feeling tell you about Adam Gase? Is it going to turn around this season? Is things going to be better? They're going to go 8-8, 9-7. You all know that you don't feel that way. So, obviously, he's going to end up having another coach, 3 coaches in 4 years. I remember when Steve Young was on the Michael Kay show, and they asked him, they said, can you win a Super Bowl with Sam Darnold? And his words were, you can win with him, but if you're expecting him to be the person that brings other people along, he's not that type of quarterback. You look at what Lamar Jackson is doing. You look at even Josh Allen to a lesser extent. He's not as great of a passer as Sam Darnold, but with minimal talent, he was able to get his team to the playoffs. This is a bad situation here, man. The guy Samini's talking about that. They signed Frank Gore. He's one of Adam Gase's guys. I thought Joe Douglas was doing something different. I thought he was here, you know, to make sure we got what we need. He's going to give Adam Gase a chance. I don't want to be tied to the hip to this guy. You got a running back here already who's 28 years old, who's better than Frank Gore was in his best season. You can't figure out a way to make that work? This is absolutely ridiculous, man. And they expect us to, for year after year after year, to keep listening to this foolishness. The organization was in a place where they needed to bring a coach in here who not only had experience, but had winning experience. And they let McCarthy go to Dallas Cowboys, and they got us this guy here. This is an absolute disaster, man. This is a disaster.
You know what they needed? This is exactly what they needed. They needed a coach that where this team was at. You had a young quarterback. There were going to be some, you know, there may be some losing years. You needed a coach that was going to get the benefit of the doubt from the fan base, that you could trust, that had a track record of previous success, so you'd buy in as a fan base. That's not what Adam Gase has. Adam Gase does not have a track record of success. And then, you know, what you saw in Miami, all the red flags, they all popped up last year. Every single red flag, every reason why he got fired in Miami, all popped up last season. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them. So to think all of a sudden that now that's going to change, I don't know how you can believe that.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.